My talk is short, so we can go to lunch soon. But on the other hand, my talk may offend some people and make lunch worse. I'm picking up a bigger My assignment is on weather. But my question here is if weather, whether it's first order effect or second order effect. At the third order, we don't care about weather.
Can you raise the transformer?
Yes. I don't think we care about weather at first order. Now, by first order, the following. Ben didn't mention in his talk, but in cell walls, people believe that dust is formed in the photosphere. On the other hand, in T-walls, which have cooler temperatures, there was no sign of dust before. Actually, the situation has changed, but anyway, as of 1996 or 1999, people didn't believe that there was dust in the photosphere. Now, heat rocks are cooler, so dust may grow and it may form clouds or even dust may rain out. So when I first worked on this problem of weather, the question was very simple. If clouds form during rain, then the weather in ground clouds. But on the other hand, if dust layer is stable, the situation with the weather may be in second order. This is a definition of my first order and second order. In the first part of my talk, I described some work on spectral variability of the T-ball. In the second part, which may offend some people, I pick up a particular model of L and T-balls, which explains the sequence from L to T continuously. And in this model, dust layer will be stable. So I raise a question about weather, and then basically in the second part, I'm denying the possibility in a sense. First, I talk about spectral variability. So what I'm saying here is the same as I mentioned. In airports, we see dust. But at lower temperature, we don't see the sign of dust in spectra at a glance. So the question is, if you see the spectra in more detail in terms of time resolution, we see some variability. And we don't know the time scale of variability, possible variability, and we don't know what might change. Of course, if dust is changing, the situation is complicated. Not complicated, but difficult. Dust causes continuum opacity, and then but simply by continuous photometry or continuous broadband photometry, it's very difficult to study
by FX.
So what we did was to observe many spectra with fine time resolution and cover a wide spectral range. And for this purpose, the best target is an isolated people. And we have chosen the first isolated people found by Sloan Digital Sky Survey. This is called SDSS-1624-00. The observation was done in 1996 on June 20th, UT from 10:53 to 12:13, only 18 minutes. We used the Silver Telescope, which is a Japanese meter telescope, in its commission phase. So we don't have enough time to cover, say, 10 hours or 20 hours. We have only 80 minutes. Using a grazing spectrograph for the Cisco, we covered from 0.05 microns to 1.8 microns with spectral resolution of 0.05 microns. With 2700 second exposures, we need an 8-meter telescope because we need to have a good signal-to-noise ratio in 100 seconds. And we observed a reference star 57 seconds away from the brown dwarf, using the same slit of the grazing spectrograph. This reference is necessary because atmosphere is changing. Effective temperature of the reference star was 5,000 Kelvin. So there is no water vapor absorption. So the effect of water vapor is territorial. Results. But first of all, the transmission variation is very significant. This is a ratio of the first spectrum to the last spectrum of the reference star. So from 1.05 microns to 1.8 microns. As we see, transmission is changing continuously, but between the first and last, the variation was significant. Absorption, transmission variation was significant.
By first and last, you mean over this period of whatever it was,
an hour? 80 minutes. So it was essential to observe reference star simultaneously to cancel out the effect of transmission variation. And this is a raw spectrum of the between 1.45 microns to 1.8 microns. And this line is the level of noise. So in 100 seconds, we could get signal-to-noise ratio, something like 100.
Sorry, just to give some background, most of the slightly hotter brown dwarfs that have been observed are fast rotators, right? Yeah. About 50-80 kilometers per second. Can anyone?
Those are the subspectral dwarfs that have been measured.
And so that turned into those periods of hours or so faster than Jupiter.
Comes out and goes.
But no one has done that.
Those are LT dwarfs.
Yeah, no, it's kind
of. Yeah, of course, of course. But you could expect T dwarfs to be somewhere in between.
Who knows, maybe they're faster.
Yeah, we thought there was a variability in M dwarfs and L dwarfs. But I think what they observed was basically chromospheric activity.
I'll talk about that.
So, I was only interested in the atmosphere.
Rotation, of course, is another form of spectral variability, which people would not normally call weather. I mean, obviously, when you look at Jupiter, you see a variation which people would not normally label weather, but it just happens to be where the great red spot is.
Well, that's weather, isn't it?
You can use that term for weather, though.
You know, it's a question of definition. A lot of what has to do with the great red spot does not vary even on decadal timescales.
Right.
There has to be a spot, though, for rotation to show itself. Has to be variation on the surface of some sort.
And this is sequence of spectra. Each spectrum corresponds to something like 400 seconds or so. Here you see this portion, the shoulder, the shoulder of the peak around 1.6 microns. And there is a variability of this sawtooth pattern. I'll expand this portion. This is from 1.5 microns to 1.6 microns in a glandular. And I couldn't identify what these are, but there seems to be a change of the depth of the sawtooth pattern. And this, of course, you may ask how much noise in here, but I think these are real.
And do you think this is the weather, or couldn't it be binarity or something like that?
Excuse me?
That variability in the atomic lines, are due to the weather variability or?
Water or not? What do you mean? The question is
weather. Are weather variability or could they be due to binarity?
It's just an hour or 80 minutes.
80 minutes. Very short.
Binary.
A very close binary rotating and moving.
Very close binary. I don't know if just 1624 is a binary or not. This is basically an isolated ground world.
But you would see the same effect in all the lines, I think. That
yeah.
Binary. We did see all the lines shift.
Okay.
If it's rotation induced, and rotation in Jupiter is what, 10 hours, something like that?
Yeah.
So it's
same order?
Actually, this is all about my variability stuff. But we have a very high signal-to-noise ratio spectrum after integrating everything. So I just check the difference between SDSS1624 and GL229B. Now this is not about variability, but if you look closely here, the depth of the methane band is D by GL290, and depths of water vapor tissues are also D by GL290. So GL290 is probably cooler than the SDSS. So that is my first part. And then I recall it is a second format. This is about unified model quarter space of L and E groups. This is a work. This is a work by Suzy. He presented his results in the IAU workshop on quadratic groups. So this is a model mapping of ground atmosphere based on dust formation and segregation. And model explains the behavior of colors and spectra of L-NT groups in breathing. I didn't mention about this L-T transition object, but recently this brown groups, which have features of both L-NT groups, were found by SDSS group. And L-T transition is not is continuous, but probably L-T transition is continuous. And this continuous transition is explained by this model. So this dust condensation temperatures obtained from some chemical computation. On the other hand, critical temperature below which dust radiates is obtained empirically from color variation. The first I mentioned about previous models. Previously, in most models, assume that dust forms as soon as the condensation is condition is fulfilled, and dust works as an effective source of opacity throughout the photosphere. That was the basic assumption. And this explained reasonably well the observed characteristics of GE165B, which is one of the first ground of candidate observation. And on the other hand, what key books are explained by dust segregated models, what Suzy calls KC. Dust one form may segregate from the observed layer and leaving apparently dust. This explains here to 290. So somehow, L works and T works were treated completely in different type of objects, as completely different type of objects. But shortcomings of previous models it is physically unrealistic to consider that formation and segregation in separate models. And Suzy in 1999 considered two cases in a single model, the necessary consequence of which was the presence of warm dust there in the photosphere. This is what he calls hybrid model. This hybrid model is applied to explain the large flux depression observed in release 229B in the optical region. But probably that was not the right way of using this model. And then there was one free parameter in this model that was critical temperature, which is only an assumption in a hybrid model. And these were the shortcomings of previous models. And then the new point is here, the determination of critical temperature below which dust segregates. it is very, very difficult to determine critical temperature from either analysis or fast segregation process. So what he did was to use J minus H, H minus K diagram, and in which Brown-Dostal very complicated behavior. And this is J minus H. J means 1.2 microns, and H means 1.6 microns. These triangles are M groups. And then from here to the upper right, as effective temperatures lower, Brown-Dostal move from here to the upper right to L groups. And then if you lower the temperature, it comes back, they come back here to early in peak force. And then finally, around 7 Kelvin, peak force show up here. So this behavior is very complicated, and nobody was able to explain before. But in this unified model, dust formed at temperature below condensation temperature, and then dust segregates at temperature below critical temperature. And then there's active dust zone, whose temperature is between critical temperature and condensation temperature. Condensation temperature is about 2,000 Kelvin for boron and iron. Critical temperature is around 18,000 Kelvin from observed limits of near infrared colors of the late L force.
I was asking what dust is and what's its concentration and so forth.
What is it? Iron. Iron or random.
Or silicate.
Silicates.
I'll talk about it in my talk.
In my talk.
Everything you ever wanted. He knows anything.
Concentration. I'm talking about somebody else's model, and I don't have the number to myself. But anyway, the point is, in this diagram, in this J minus H, H minus K diagram, the color goes to the right and comes back, and there's a red limit. And these limits correspond to critical temperature of 18,000 Kelvin. And active dust zones can be found in all crude groups is effective temperature below 3,000 Kelvin. For a very cool object with effective temperature near 1,000 Kelvin, active dust zone is located in the photosphere. That's in case of GL229b, effective temperature is about 900 Kelvin. And so it's very deep. So the active dust zone is located in a very deep in the atmosphere where opacity is much greater than 1. On the other hand, for effective temperature of 15,000 Kelvin at the dust zone is located near the surface, and you can see the effect of dust. Versus log Tg. I think you're interested in CGS here. A is a case for an air flow with the temperature 1750 Kelvin. And straight line shows radiative zone. And then dotted lines shows convective portion. And these dots show active dust zone. So for airflows, apparently dust opacity is significant. On the other hand, in T-flows, active dust zone is actually thicker but located deeper inside, and it doesn't act as an opacity source. Around 1350 Kelvin, active dust zone is located near pi equals 1, and this corresponds to transition region between air and heat. This is a spectra reproduced by different models. Orange dots are observations. This is ESSL539, this is an air flow. And blue lines represent the unified model, and let's see, light blue line corresponds to the case B, which is a dusty model, which assumes the photosphere is entirely dusty. So dust-free model is green, and dust-free model doesn't explain airflows. And this one is a transition object, SDSS0837. Dusty model, which is this light blue, doesn't explain the spectrum at all. And that free model, which is green, is deviated from the observations. And blue model, blue, which is a unified model, reasonably reproduces transition object. And then, finally, around 7 Kelvin, which is SDSS1624. Both dust-free model, which is a green, and unified model, which is blue, reproduce SDSS1624 as well. So, in summary, this unified model is intermediate in case B with the dusty model and case C with the dust-free model. In the case B, critical temperature was assumed to the surface temperature. In the case C, critical temperature was assumed to be the same as condensation temperature. this large atmosphere after dust induces surface convection zone, which will play a significant role in transporting and mixing the dust. The limitation of the model is critical temperature may actually depend on the temperature, but it's very difficult to determine critical temperature by first principle. But anyway, this model appears to reproduce the continuity from air force to heat force. So the reason I mentioned about this model is that dust air may exist, but dust air may be stable and we may not see weather as a first order effect. That is my conclusion. Thank you.
Okay, questions? Adam?
Well, this is something that many people are converging on. I believe Mark Marley is going to address this at his talk this afternoon, the OIT transition. When you model dust, you have to have particle sizes and column depths, or at least the amount of material in the cloud region that forms the clouds. You also need the optical properties of the materials. And so you're making assumptions along the way. And in particular, what is the assumption made in these models of the particle sizes?
Particle sizes?
The original Tsuji stuff had particle sizes
0.1
millimeter stuff medium.
Yeah, it's 0.1.
0.1 microns. And that might be a little bit hard to swallow when looking at meteorological models. I think Mark will address that as well. Might be off by a factor of 100. But I think that your basic conclusion that there is a dust layer is robust from the work of Jones and Tsuji and the late M dwarfs, as there was an indication of dust. That the L dwarfs are in fact the dust dwarfs, and then they're making a transition by the evolution of the, predominantly by the evolution of the dust layer, and how it becomes deeper and deeper, goes deeper and deeper to the T dwarfs. But it's not the case that the dust is necessary to explain the optical, which we've discussed. Which was also a factor in the older Tsuji model. We thought you needed to evoke dust to explain the spectrum shortwave of 1 micron, but I don't think that that's the case anymore.
No.
So you agree with that?
Right. That's basically for dustion.
Can I ask you a question about the assumption that seems to underlie this? You mentioned the word stability.
Yeah.
Is it being assumed that these grains are stable under the conditions that you place them over these long time scales?
Basically, dust is in equilibrium. Dust is destroyed but created.
Yeah, I'm just going to, that's what I was getting to. I mean, this is a process in which the dust is being replenished in some sense.
Not replenished.
Dust,
yes, equilibrium.
There are clouds here.
It's the form. It's like rain. Yeah, you have any messing back up and material sediments there.
Okay, so what about the issue of sublimation or evaporation from the dust grain?
Sublimation. Sublimation. By sublimation,
evaporation.
That's it. Will happen.
If you wait here.
It's included. I mean, if you look at the
more of the meteorology of the,
it's a messy model. You have to try and account for that, but
yeah, I'll talk about it. Still good, yeah.
It's not in any sense stable in an absolute way, of course.
What we have in these atmospheres that distinguishes them and makes them more planetary than astronomical is not only the chemistry to which Ben referred, but the meteorology that is absolutely there. And there's a hierarchy. At the higher temperatures, we have these grain clouds, silicates predominantly, which is referred. If you get to lower temperatures, you're going to have water clouds that, of course, is warm the weather on the coast. As you get to lower temperatures, you have the ammonia clouds, and you see these ammonia clouds in Jupiter. And this just happens at different temperatures. And so this is a robust general conclusion of the is subject to substone mass objects.
But Nick's point is correct.
Some indications of that.
Basically, this is a dynamical process also. Yeah. I mean, you have the growth time scale versus sedimentation on time scale on the eventually convective time scale. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure Mark would talk about
the dynamics of the atmosphere.
That's a very tricky
of our own atmosphere with the water clouds.
Sublimation, I think they want to take a look at it. I don't think sublimation is important under these conditions.
Well, sublimation in equilibrium is.
Yeah, in equilibrium. Yeah. Sure.
Well, it's part of the dynamic equilibrium.
Yeah.
Okay.
You
may not be
able to live here. As Ben pointed out earlier, in different wavelengths, one can see a very varying depth inside the atmosphere of a T-dwarf. And the point where the cloudy active dust zone that you mentioned drops below the photosphere is something that happens gradually, and then you can probably probe vertically in the atmosphere by observing the different wavelengths. In the transition objects.
Yeah.
I'm assuming the tau equals one line is a Rossmann-Dehn
exactly.
Optical depth or something like this.
Yeah,
yeah, this tau equals one is very, what to say, sketchy in a sense, because the atmosphere is not gray, so.
That's right.
But this is an average Rossmann optical depth.
Could be
whereas, I mean, Didier's point is that it should be a monochromatic optical depth as well. Makes sense.
You could plot a range that is represented by the spectrum.
Oh,
okay. I hesitate to mention that I will have a plot in my talk.
Is there anything you will not address in your talk?
Yeah, what about the
Well,
Adam, maybe you can record the first half.
Okay. So, are there any more questions? Okay, so, can we start again at 2? Is that feasible? We have a